Les colloques du Collège de France.
Bonjour, good morning, and thank you for being here on this very hot day. We should be getting the room a little bit cooler in the very soon, so hopefully it won't be too difficult to follow what will be going on this morning. So welcome to this one-day conference entitled Mental Health and Addiction, Understanding Determinants to Improve Population Well-being. This meeting today will close the series of courses on mental health and substance use, which was part of this year's annual Chair in Public Health at the Collège de France. And I'm very honored that world-renowned colleagues from different parts of Europe and North America have accepted to take part in this interdisciplinary conversation. Throughout the day, we will discuss what shapes population trends in mental health and how to prevent or limit the occurrence of mental disorders, hearing from the perspective of medical doctors and pediatrics in psychiatry, but also hearing from economists, anthropologists, and of course, epidemiologists. So in particular, we will focus on social determinants of mental health in an attempt to bring together research from two different strands, which can but do not always intersect: social epidemiology and mental health research. So if you allow me to start on a slightly lighter note than we usually do, I wanted to say that in some ways, bringing together different areas of thinking requires hybridization of traditions, disciplines, methods. And hybrid lineages can produce results that are strange, like this one, right? This is a Zorse, so it's a mix between a horse and a zebra. But sometimes they can also produce results that are beautiful, such as this hybrid rose, or maybe powerful and modern, such as this hybrid vehicle, right? The idea being every time that by combining ideas, methods, strands from different traditions, we come up with something new and something original that didn't exist before, and that maybe wasn't even in nature. So of course, these are entire simplifications, and some of the talks you will hear today bring together much more than two traditions. There will be talk about complexity, about changes in scientific traditions over time, and maybe at the end of the day, we can discuss which of these illustrations is most relevant to match our conversation throughout the day. But I'm certain that in any case, the discussions we will have throughout the day will leave us all thinking, having with new ideas, and maybe thinking a bit differently about our own work and what is possible to better understand population trends in mental health. So let me start with some definitions of the traditions and presence. And first with social epidemiology, which is maybe my core background. So if epidemiology is the study of the distribution of states of health in populations, as written by Lisa Berkman, who's here in the room, and Ichiro Kawachi and Maria Gilmore, who are the authors of the textbook in social epidemiology. Social epidemiology, then, is the study of social distributions of and social determinants of states of health. So as opposed to branches of epidemiology, which focus on specific disease areas, cancer, cardiovascular disease, infectious diseases, social epidemiology is closer to maybe environmental or nutritional epidemiology, where we focus on certain types of exposures. And we can study a wide variety of health outcomes. These exposures that are within the realm of social epidemiology include socioeconomic status, discrimination, working conditions, or labor market characteristics, as well as social networks and family policies. Anyway, that's the definition in the textbook. Maybe colleagues have other kinds of definitions, or maybe we can discuss about whether this is the only definition. But anyway, that's in the textbook. Another important idea is that social epidemiology is interested in explaining population health trends and the ways in which population characteristics influence them. And obviously, this is very different from certain types of medical traditions, which start with the individual and then try to go up. So I think this intersection between, or this conflict sometimes between thinking about individual characteristics, individual health problems, and how we bring this to a population level is something that I personally struggle with. And again, maybe we can discuss this today, how to make good and precise inference without overgeneralization, but trying to understand population health trends anyway. So this is just the table of contents of the textbook in social epidemiology, which of course I'm sure you, some of you have read, and if you haven't read it, it's a must read. And you can see the different chapters going through different types of social determinants, but also different types of methods in social epidemiology that are a bit special compared to other areas. And also a whole part about policies, which we will also talk about today. The immediate and more distant characteristics of our social world, illustrated here by the model proposed by Margaret Whitehead and Goran Dahlgren, according to what we learn and what we teach in social epidemiology, shape the way we feel, the stressful experiences in our lives, what we eat, how we move, and also whether or not we get access to preventive strategies or to the healthcare system when needed. Social epidemiology has a long tradition, going back to the 19th century and starting with Louis-René Villermé, a French physician. That's the story we tell. There may have been other people before or around that time, but that's how we tell the story, right? So Villermé was a French physician, was the first person who documented systematic differences in mortality across neighborhoods in Paris, depending on the average poverty level in these different neighborhoods. So he did an ecological study, which is a seminal work in social epidemiology, and probably the first use of statistics to actually quantify socioeconomic inequalities in health. And he was followed by many other physicians and researchers. I just wanted to mention Rudolf Virchow and Edwin Chadwick, who founded social medicine and advocated for collective hygiene and public health, respectively, in Germany and in the UK. And of course, social epidemiology is also very much inspired by the work of Émile Durkheim, considered as the founding father of sociology, who identified social isolation as a cause of suicide rates at population level in his famous book, Le Suicide. So the first studies in social epidemiology go back 200 years. During the 20th century, research in this area gained new momentum, with growing interest in the health consequences of stressful events and the underlying physiological mechanisms. And of course, this interest in stress and the role it plays in shaping health at the individual and also at the population level is something that social epidemiologists share with psychiatrists, with psychologists, whose tools to measure population patterns of mental disorders were also developed during the 20th century. So research in psychiatric epidemiology really emerged in the second half of the 20th century. The aim is to understand population patterns of mental health and associated risk and protective factors. And this would not be possible without appropriate measures of psychiatric disorders, which are standardized, reproducible, and reliable, and can be used in large-scale surveys. Obviously, measuring mental health on a large scale among hundreds or thousands of people is not the same thing as assessing mental health at an individual level. And to be able to do these large population-based surveys, you have to have good standardized measures. Psychiatrists and epidemiologists needed classifications of the symptoms and that could be used by different assessors and on a wide basis. And these emerged after Second World War through the Diagnostic Statistical Manual published since 1952 by the American Psychiatric Association and the International Classification of Diseases, which is published by the World Health Organization. So since the 1950s, definitions and assessments of psychiatric disorders have undergone many changes as scientific findings in this area, in the area of mental health, have evolved. And as we have learned more about different types of reactions, the brain, the mechanisms that can induce certain types of behaviors. And these classifications are, of course, debated contested from different sides, and for many reasons, including the fact that they probably oversimplify in some ways the complexity of mental health by standardizing the symptoms and producing binary outcomes. So that's one possible criticism and one way in which they will. There are discussions to try to make them evolve in the future. Another criticism is that they're not specific enough and that many diagnoses overlap. And a third criticism is that these classifications are actually disconnected from recent findings in neuroscience. So there's neuroscience on one side, psychology and psychiatry on the other, and the two don't necessarily meet, but maybe we'll hear about this more when we talk specifically about psychiatric epidemiology this afternoon. But anyway, as it stands today, the DSM and the ICD are the code books of psychiatric epidemiology, and they're our reference when we want to measure depression, anxiety, or any other kind of mental health disorder at a population level. Another criticism of the DSM is that despite the role of socioeconomic, cultural, and environmental determinants as a source of risk of mental health problem occurrence, progression, and access to treatment, these are not adequately integrated in current classifications. The recent roadmap for a new DSM, which the American Psychiatric Association uncovered recently, specifically identifies social determinants of health as key dimensions to strengthen the new classification. So the new classification will come up in a few years, it's not clear when, but there will be a specific dimension, at least there is a specific working group on socioeconomic and cultural characteristics, and maybe some socioeconomic characteristics will be directly integrated either in the diagnostic criteria or in the assessment of different types of impacts of mental health problems. This new strategy for the new DSM, published by the APA, specifically mentions the Whitehead and Dahlgren model of social determinants of health, which means that it seems like there will be opportunity to bring psychiatric and social epidemiology closer together in upcoming years. Well, bringing social and psychiatric epidemiology together is what we'll try to do today, throughout the day, taking a life course perspective, which may be one way to bring together mental health research and social epidemiology. I missed some slides, but okay. So what is this life course approach? Well, of course, in mental health research, we're very interested in the ways in which individuals grow and evolve over time and the way this translates into certain psychological, cognitive, and developmental aspects of their well-being. Social epidemiology, there's also been a lot of interest in life course exposures and the ways in which different types of risks accumulate over time. Actually, this model presents, it's sort of a classic model. I know it's not the only one, and we can probably discuss this also throughout the day. But the idea is that exposures throughout our life can have effects on health. Perhaps depending on the type of health outcome, there are different ways to think about it. Perhaps there are certain types of health outcomes for which there are sensitive periods. So if you're exposed, so childhood could be a sensitive period, for instance, in terms of mental health later in life. If you're exposed to certain types of adverse events or risks, as we will hear from some of the speakers today, in childhood in particular, it's possible that these have long-term consequences. There's the accumulation model, where it's actually the overall burden of different types of negative and stressful experiences that results in health outcomes. The pathway model, which imagines that actually one exposure leads to maybe a certain type of health outcome, which then leads to other types of exposures, and where exposures and health outcomes are intertwined over time. And then maybe there's room for social mobility, which can actually improve health. This is very theoretical. It's actually very difficult to test. And it's probably difficult to identify one of these mechanisms versus the others. They probably operate in conjunction. And in the area of mental health, it's likely that there are both sensitive periods, that there's an accumulation of different stressful experiences, and that pathways also operate over time. But again, this is what we'll try to tackle throughout the day. So going back to what we'll discuss today, this morning and this afternoon, this morning we will start with two presentations about the social determinants of children's mental health and their caretakers' health, followed by two presentations regarding young people specifically, one regarding the long-term consequences of early adversity, and a second regarding social determinants of mental health in a global perspective. After lunch, we will reconvene to hear about the intersection between mental health and economic well-being among young adults, followed by presentations about the determinants of adults' mental health, and maybe some suggestions of how to promote better mental health and also prevent the occurrence of mental disorders, with a focus on long-term consequences of trauma. Finally, we will end the day with a discussion of where the current state of interplay between psychiatric and social epidemiology leaves us, and hopefully some perspectives for the future, for some of, especially for the students in the room. I hope this will be really an interesting and learning experience. So hopefully by the end of the day, we will be in better position to identify ways to make connections between approaches that aim to understand mental health and those that are primarily focused on the impacts of the social environment on population health patterns. And we'll see where we stand in terms of the hybridization of these two different domains. Before we start with the presentation and before I hand over to the first speaker, let me finish by some housekeeping things. So we will be in this room the whole day. I hope it doesn't get too hot and hopefully there will be a little bit more mitigation of the temperature. We will have two short breaks, one at 11 and one at 3, and a lunch break between 12:45 and 2 approximately. So there's no food or drink to be bought on the premises of the Collège de France. So if you need refreshments, you actually need to leave the building. All the talks will be filmed, and there is a microphone which will be circulated for questions. We will have two Q&A questions, but I think some of the speakers will also leave a little bit of room for questions at the end of their presentation. So please feel free to ask questions. And please don't be shy. If you would rather ask a question in French, somebody will be happy to translate. So really the idea is as much as possible to engage in this in a dialogue.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.